Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Hello and welcome to the second of the summer specials of Naylor's Natter. This week I'm in conversation with Patrice Bain on her and Pooja Agarwal's new book, Powerful Teaching. Patrice is a veteran teacher with extensive experience of using cognitive science in the classroom, and this book is exactly what this podcast is all about. In my view, it treads a similar path to What It Looks Like in the Classroom by Carl Hendrick and Robin McPherson, and has really practical strategies that all teachers can use in a similar vein to Kate Jones, who was a recent guest on the podcast, in her book as well. I don't normally offer too much of my opinion on the podcast, but one quote that Patrice said really struck me, and she said that cognitive science is nothing to be scared of. And I think about how carefully I have to tread on certain topics for fear of misunderstanding or misrepresenting them. And what Patrice and Pooja have done in this book is make the cognitive science practical and allow teachers to move from being evidence-based to evidence-informed. And a quote directly from their book, and they say, "When it comes to retrieval practice, space practice, interleaving and metacognition, the combination of being research-based and classroom-proven is paramount. And this, for me, is key to the research and evidence movement, making teachers less dogmatic about do this, not that, and more evidence-informed but based in the classroom." Patrice is firmly classroom-based, as am I, and this allows her to speak with her empathy and experience on how best to represent and incorporate cognitive science into lessons and into classroom. So, sit back, relax, and listen to the conversation with Patrice Bain. Okay, hi Patrice, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi Phil, thank you so much for having me.
No problem at all, and thank you for getting up early, because I believe that with the time difference, it's quite early in the morning over there.
Oh, it's actually 9 o'clock, 9 a.m., so I'm good.
Oh, great, great. Well, it's a sunny Blackpool afternoon out here, so it's great everywhere. That's brilliant, yeah. And thanks again for being here. Just for an introductory question, I'd just like, if you could, to tell listeners a little bit about your career to this point, how you met your co-author of your new book, Powerful Teaching, Pooja, and how you decided to work together.
Okay. Well, let's see. I'm a veteran teacher, having taught at the middle school level for about 25 years. And around 2005, I met Dr. Mark McDaniel, one of the authors of Make It Stick. And it was this wonderful meeting, and he was talking about he had come to Washington University in St. Louis to start investigating how people learn and memory. And I was talking to him about teaching, and we just clicked. A lot of the ways that I was teaching were things that he was wanting to investigate. So he and Roddy Roediger, who is another author of Make It Stick, wrote a grant. And it was the first time that authentic research was done in a classroom. Up until that time, most of the research had been done in laboratories. So that's how it started. And the person, the liaison that went between Washington University and my classroom was Pooja Agarwal. And so the rest is history. That is how we met. We started by doing the first research in the country in my classroom, and we've remained collaborators ever since.
Fantastic, fantastic. Right, let's find out a little bit more. So for listeners, could you describe what is powerful teaching, and how did you two come up with this idea?
Well, what we had done is part of this grant with Pooja and Mark McDaniel and Roddy Roediger was based on not only how people learn, but the strategies such as retrieval and spacing. And we were able to see how these really affected student success and student learning. And I was able to figure out why these strategies, why these principles worked in my classroom. And from that, then I took the research and was able to develop strategies based on this research. So Pooja and I had thought for a while, you know, there really has not been a book written by a cognitive scientist and a veteran teacher taking the research and showing how it really works in a classroom. So we decided to write a book, and, you know, as authors, we would toss around different ideas for titles, and we kept going back to, this is so powerful. You know, putting this information together, it's so powerful. And we looked at each other with big eyes and said, powerful teaching, this is what it is. So that's kind of how it came about.
Brilliant, brilliant. And I'm absolutely fascinated with this. And I was just talking to you before we came on about, I've just started reading this. And listeners to the podcast obviously know that this is an evidence and research-based podcast.
Yes.
But in terms of having you, and I love the term veteran teacher, by the way, because I think that I think that's something that I need to know to after next year's my 20th year in the classroom. So I think I could adopt that as a perhaps one of an added title to my string of current ones.
Well, you can.
But what I like about it is that you've taken the cognitive science and then you've put it into very, very concrete ways that teachers can use that in the classroom. So is it okay if we just move on to ask a little bit about each of those sections and maybe how you've gone about doing that?
Oh, that would be great.
Brilliant.
So let's start with retrieval. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I like about the strategies is that teachers may already be using some of these, but by tweaking or being more mindful and really being purposeful in knowing when to put these strategies into your teaching is really key. So for retrieval, there's a quote that Pooja said that I just love, and it is, so often we concentrate on putting things into our heads. What if instead we concentrate on pulling things out? And I think that right there is so powerful because as teachers, we often think that, you know, we have a class and we're imparting knowledge and then the knowledge is in the students and oftentimes that's where it stays. And with retrieval, what we are doing is we are pulling that information out. And this is where the real learning occurs. So I tried to take a look at how I taught and what are some ways that I could ensure that I was pulling information out. And one of the things I realized early on was that homework was not successful for me. I was spending several hours a night grading homework. I had anywhere between 165 to 187 students every day. And so it would take me hours to grade the homework at night. And I would hand it back the next day and we would go over it. But that's where it ended. My students weren't really able to discuss the information in a few days. And I realized that so often students have mastered doing the homework where they would simply look at a question, read the question, look up an answer, write it down, and repeat. Mm. And they weren't really retrieving anything. So I quit giving homework. And what I started doing instead was what I call giving mini quizzes. And I would simply take whatever we had studied that day. And at the end of the day, whether I taught history, so it could have been a geography, it could have been, you know, anything that we had talked about. And I would put it on little slips of paper and put it in a basket. And then the next day, as the students came in, we would have a mini quiz where I would randomly choose five clues and they would answer them. And it wasn't for a grade, so retrieval should be low stakes or no stakes. but it allowed the students to understand what they could retrieve versus what they couldn't. And my couple hours of night of grading turned into a 15-minute analysis after school of, okay, they got this. Okay, I need to focus on this a little bit more. And every class, you know, the clues would go back into my basket. And so every class would have a different random five. And so that was one way, rather than giving homework, I could see a big change in having the students start to retrieve information. So mini quizzes is one strategy. Another one is I looked at flashcards. And I saw that flashcards, the way my students had been doing them, was basically like homework. They would see something, they would write it down and go to the next flashcard. And students were basically, again, rereading versus retrieving. So I simply changed the way I did flashcards, and I called them retrieval cards. And rather than looking up the definitions, I would either provide the word or a definition, and the students would need to retrieve this information. I also, another thing that I came up with were called retrieval guides. And what we would do while we were discussing things in class, all pencils were down, and when we got to a good breaking point, then I would say, okay, write down two things from what we just discussed. Or I would give a prompt, go ahead and write this down. And then I would say, share with your neighbor, and then let's have a group share. So these are just a few simple ways that all teachers can do. It's not going to add to their already overflowing plates of what needs to be done, but simple tweaks that really allow the students to retrieve and to be able to pull out this information.
It's fascinating. I'm just listening to you there and writing a few things down. So in terms of the baskets, for the retrieval baskets, mm-hmm. how long do those questions stay in there? And are you almost retrieving information from the beginning of the term or the beginning of the year, or even in some cases, you know, previous years? Does that happen?
That's a great question. So first of all, the way I would plan my lessons is that I would always start with the end. So, for example, I would know what my essential question would be, and I would work backwards. So, for example, one of my questions could be something like compare the French and Russian revolutions. Could either one of them have been avoided? Why or why not? So if that was an essential question, I would work backwards from that. And I would look at, for my mini quizzes on a daily basis, what types of things do I want my students to be able to retrieve that will effectively help them answer these essential questions. Now, every day I would take out the old questions and add new questions, because the daily mini quizzes were simply from the previous day. And again, you could use a basket, you could use a hat, you could use a bin, you know, you could use any type of container. But then once a week, I would have what I called the BBQ, or the big basket quiz. Again, you can use any kind of container. And I would take out those questions from the daily quizzes that I knew would be things that I would want the students, again, to be retrieving for what I wanted them to know by the end of the chapter or the end of the unit. And those in that bigger basket would stay. And so once a week, I would randomly choose 10 from there. So they were getting anything from weeks earlier to that week. So not only were they having a chance to retrieve, but they were also I was providing spacing. So that's another one of the power tools. So in our book, we talk about retrieval. We also talk about spacing. And spacing is having students retrieve information at spaced intervals. And that really promotes learning. And so if you teach something once and you don't go back to it, oftentimes the students have no recollection of that. In fact, I'm not sure about in England or in the UK, but I know often here in my class, I would find that the first month or so, I would need to be, not the first month, first several weeks, often reviewing what students had learned previous years. And I would often get these, like, deer in the headlights look like, I've never heard that before, you know, and you know it was taught the previous year. But it's because that information had not been spaced throughout the year. So by what I found was by adding these little tweaks to my teaching, incorporating spacing, taking what I knew I wanted the students to remember at the end of the semester, at the end of the year, by spacing those out over time, the students really remembered these things. I often have had students come back, write to me when they're in college and say, Mrs. Bain, why is it I remember so many things from your class when I don't remember that much from other classes? And it wasn't me as a teacher, but it was the principals that, you know, I had them retrieve, I had them space, I had them interleave, I had them use their metacognition. And when you use these principles and the strategies that support them, you have authentic learning going on with your students. When you bring things up from the past, you know, students are able to discuss, to have deep questioning and critical thinking and all those things that we really want our students to be able to do.
No, absolutely. I was just listening there to the thing about spacing. And, you know, spacing is something that listeners to the podcast will probably be familiar with. But in terms of how they may plan longer-term learning, in terms of schemes of learning, long-term plans, have you got any other suggestions about how you might use it? Obviously, you mentioned in conjunction with retrieval practice. But are there any mm-hmm. practical strategies that you use within your classroom for spacing?
Well, for one thing, I know that really big key ideas, I would simply go ahead into my lesson plan book and simply jot myself a note, you know, remember to go over this, you know. And so in 2 months, when I was at that point in my lesson plan, I would already have notes to myself, make sure I retrieve this information. Another really easy one that I did all the time was I simply called it a blast from the past, or you could do it as a throwback Thursday, or yeah. You know, anything like that. And it's simply when you're discussing, when you're teaching, just doing a quick, oh, remember how this ties into, and then you just bring up something from a month or two earlier. And the student, and then you just pause. And students, you can see them looking up to the ceiling, like, oh, what was that? What was that? Yeah. You know? And you stress to the students, you're likely to forget a little bit, and that's a good thing. We call that a desirable difficulty. Yeah. Because when you are then able to retrieve it, you have strengthened that memory. So you, not only using these techniques, blast from the past and incorporating and you know, the big basket quizzes, all of these things are so important. But I think the key is on the very first day, I would always tell my students, I'm your teacher. And my first priority is to teach you how to learn. And so it was always, you know, on the first day, my 11-year-olds loved the word metacognition. You know, I would discuss desirable difficulties. I would discuss spacing. I would discuss retrieval. So these all became part of our shared language. And when students are able to look at learning and how they learn, they tend to, if they get things wrong, not internalize failure, but instead, oh, okay, excuse me, I need to use a different strategy, or, I need to look at that one a little bit more. It really changes the whole dynamics of the teacher-student relationship and the learning that goes on in your classroom. It's wonderful.
No, it is wonderful. And I mean, that's a really good example. Then we talk about Blast from the Past or Throwback Thursdays, because it helps. Mm-hmm. It helps the teacher to remember to do these things rather than taking what potentially sometimes can be dry research papers, taking it, oh yeah, I remember Throwback Thursday is spacing. You know, he talked about the BBQ. Was it the big, you know, but these things now are already sort of in my mind. I'm thinking, well, this is the way to remind me to use the cognitive science that obviously we're aware of. And it's very practical ways to do that. So I absolutely love the Blast from the Past, the Throwback Thursdays, especially when I think when I started teaching, and listeners to the podcast will know this, that it was very much a conveyor belt sort of curriculum model that we employed, which was, I will teach this in this lesson, I will teach that in that lesson, and that's it, done. We move on to the next thing.
That's exactly right. Cognitive science is it's not scary, you know? It's this great way to teach and great way to learn. And for teachers, there are so many strategies at your fingertips. And once you become aware of the cognitive science, and you don't have to dive into all sorts of research manuals, you know, you can take what you're already doing, look at how you're teaching, and how can you flip that to retrieval? How can you flip from reviewing to retrieval? Because teachers can do this. That's what is so exciting.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. The next bit, Patrice, if I may, is metacognition. Mm-hmm. Now, again, listeners will know that I'm fascinated by metacognition. And actually, I've delivered a few keynotes and various courses on the topic, but I still find it really, really difficult to explain what it is and how to incorporate it into lessons. And you've got some fantastic suggestions in Powerful Teaching. So if you could just outline how you maybe explain metacognition to your students at the beginning of the year, and maybe some strategies or some ways you go about encouraging metacognition in your classroom.
I would love to. I love metacognition. So I would usually start by asking my students a question. And the question was, who is Lady Murasaki Shikibu? And of course, this is the first time in the curriculum in my school that world history has been taught to the extent that I taught it. And so most of the students would look at each other and absolutely have no clue who that was. And so I would stress to my students, I said, you may not have known the answer to that, and I want you to embrace that feeling of not knowing, because that is metacognition. Metacognition is the ability to tell the difference between what you know and what you don't know. And then I will go, oh, by the way, Lady Murasaki Shikibu was a Japanese princess who lived around the year 1000, who is credited for writing the world's first novel, The Tale of Genji. So back to my students. So I would also ask my students, have you ever studied for a really long time for a test and you think you are absolutely going to nail it, and you take the test and you get it back and you did not do well at all? And just about every hand would go up. And I would say, that is because you were studying what you already knew versus what you did not know. Because students, when they are studying, they often take a look at what they know and they feel this false fluency that I know this, I know this, I know this, and they don't concentrate on what they don't know. So by explaining this to the students, because everybody can identify with thinking you know something and then not doing well, that part of my job in teaching them how to learn is how to discriminate between what you know and what you don't know. So, for example, every day when we did the mini quizzes, they had an opportunity to test their metacognition. I came up with what I called the four steps to metacognition. And I would use these on the retrieval cards, on retrieval guides, metacognition sheets. And I just want to say, because this is audio, that if you go to our website, www.powerfulteaching.org, you can download these. You know, the information is right there. So back to the four steps of metacognition. If, say, the students were completing retrieval cards, the first step is I would have them take a look at the retrieval cards and simply put a star if they knew it or a question mark if they didn't. Don't answer anything. You are simply making a judgment of learning. Then the second step is to go back and answer all the ones that you know. The third step is the first time that you open your notes or open your book and you look up those that you don't know. And then step four is to go back and verify those that you knew. Now, the students got so used to using this process that it was just, this is the way they did it. You know, they didn't even question, because it helped them know what they knew and what they didn't know. And then they would have these papers that would have the retrieval cards or retrieval guides that would have the question marks on there. So these were automatic study tools for them that when they took them home, they knew that those were the areas for which to study. So as teachers teaching metacognition, how can we help provide feedback to the students that allow them to discriminate what they know versus what they don't? I think a big problem that we as teachers can get into is when the first time that students retrieve information is at a test or at an exam. And instead, what we need to do is build in the retrieval, the metacognition, all these tools along the way, so that when it is time for an exam, the students know it. In fact, when I would have big chapter or unit exams, I simply called them celebrations, because it was not anxiety filled. It was really, look at how much you've learned. And it just changes the whole dynamics. And the students really were excited to show, because they did well and they had learned a lot.
No, absolutely. What I liked about what you've said there is that we have this phrase that there's no metacognition without cognition. And the fact that you've looked at dividing the questions into the ones that the pupils or students do know and the ones that they don't, and then looking at some strategies that they can come up with to try and address that. And you said that studying is obviously one of those.
Right. But again, I always stress to my students, retrieve. Don't review, retrieve. You know, you can just simply look at things over and over and over again and think that you know something when you don't. The key is being able to retrieve, whether you're saying it out loud, studying with a friend, in the car, you know, with your parent or with your friends, you know, make sure that you are retrieving versus simply reviewing.
No, definitely. Definitely. I'm just conscious of time a little bit, Patrice, only because when I started the podcast, I said this every week, but I made it so that it would be, as we say over here, sort of commute time. I suppose I know you said the same thing over there, but for our listeners, it was very much going to school and coming back, you can listen to these podcasts. So if I can just move on, because there's so much more interesting stuff in the book, can we just talk about interleaving? Because this is the one that I know is a very powerful study technique for students, but what I think sometimes is it's difficult for teachers to maybe incorporate interleaving into their lessons or into schemes of work or things like that. So how do you suggest that teachers make the best use of interleaving?
I think first of all, to understand what is interleaving. And interleaving is looking at similar objects through a different lens. So I kind of think of interleaving as an umbrella, and an umbrella might be the idea of revolutions. And so I will use, you know, let's talk about the French Revolution. Let's talk about the Russian Revolution. Let's talk about all sorts of different revolutions. What I'm doing is I'm using this umbrella, this main topic of revolutions, and I'm interleaving different revolutions so that the students need to discriminate between which revolution. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So another, we had a reader in the book club who likened interleaving to a fruit salad, that as long as you mix similar fruits, you know, the umbrella is the fruit salad, but you could add grapes and you could add melon and you could add, you know, whatever. But most likely you would not add a tomato to that, even though a tomato is a fruit. Mm-hmm. So the key to interleaving is you want like concepts, you want like ideas, but present them in a way that the students need to pull up the facts, retrieve the facts to discriminate between what it is you're teaching.
That's really interesting, because when we've talked about interleaving, and we say that, you know, the curriculum is naturally interleaved in the sense that pupils and students will go from one lesson to the next lesson and do different topics. And then we had sort of strange notions around, you know, you're going to do a little bit of biology for a bit because I'm a scientist, then do a bit of chemistry and do a bit of physics. But actually, that doesn't make any sense. And what you're saying there, and again, it's another brilliant analogy, you know, the fruit salad, it's like concepts being mixed up a little bit to be able to distinguish between, and it's feeding into that metacognition as well, isn't it, in terms of knowledge of strategies as well.
Absolutely.
No, that's really, really brilliant. And okay, Patrice, the last couple of bits. So what I'd like to do is, I know that the book's going really, really well in the UK, so much so that I can't get it on Amazon in a hard copy. You know, I can only get it on the Kindle, but I will be getting a hard copy as soon as I can. So could you just tell us a bit more about your website, about where listeners can get the book from, and, you know, where you're speaking next? Because I think this podcast is getting a little bit more popular over there now, thanks to my Thomas Guskey one last time. So I've analysed the listeners. I've got a few more listeners in the States now, so that's good. So if you can sort of talk about where you're going to be speaking next, maybe, and whether or not you're going to come over to the UK, perhaps.
Okay. Yes, we are just thrilled with how this book is taking off, and mostly because we so believe in its message that building this community of other powerful teachers is really exciting. Pooja lives in Boston and is flying into St. Louis, where I live, this weekend, and we're having our official book launch So we'll have some book signings and a workshop here in St. Louis. Last week we were in Chicago. I have other ones coming up in Illinois. We'll be in Seattle, Colorado. So we've got several going on, Florida, many throughout the country. And we would love to come to the UK. So if there is, maybe you can help me figure out how, I don't know how you get people to speak in the UK. I only know how we do it here. So any help on that?
Well, I'm sure there will be. And as you've seen on the sort of the Twitter timeline and various things, we've got quite a lot of Research Ed conferences that take place in the UK. So we've got Research Ed National conferences coming up fairly soon. But myself and Simon Cox, who works at the Blackpool Research School, we run a Research Ed conference as well. So, you know, if you'd ever like to come over to sunny Blackpool, I don't know if you've ever heard where Blackpool is, but we have a nice tower that's, you know, quite a tourist attraction. So that if the quality of educational speakers at the conference doesn't attract you, the seaside, the good weather and the tower might well do as well.
Oh, it all sounds wonderful.
Oh, it is. It is. Well, listen, Patrice, thank you very much again. I really, really appreciate you speaking to me on this. And what I'll do is I'll put links to your website. I'll put links to a few of the videos because I know that you did a video of, you know, opening the book and talking a little bit about that, and any links to anything that you're coming up to soon on the podcast intro. And just to say thank you again. I really, really appreciate you coming on Nailers Natter and speaking to me.
Thank you so much, Phil. This has been delightful. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Amazing interview there with Patrice, and the insights that she gave from her experience and the way that she uses those cognitive science strategies in the classroom will be a real help to me, and I'm sure they will be to listeners too. So if you want to check out Patrice's website and you want to check out the Powerful Teaching book, I've put links to both in the podcast intro. And if you're interested in the book, that's available from, as Craig Barton would say, all good and all evil bookshops. So, into the shameless plugs section. So, can I just do a big thank you to start? And the big thank you is to Oliver Caviglioli. And as listeners will have noticed, he has designed an amazing new logo for Nailers Natter. And he's done that out of the goodness of his heart. So I really, really appreciate him doing that for me. And I intend to use that artwork everywhere I go now. I'm even thinking of a line of branded clothing for Nailers Natter to give away to listeners. So let me know your thoughts on that. Back to the shameless plugs, and coming up, and I've been saying this for quite a few weeks now, but coming up, we are going to have that delayed Michael Young interview. I've had some issues with editing that, so that's hopefully going to be out next week. I'll be speaking to Mark McCourt tomorrow on Mastery. That interview's been delayed due to the extreme weather and the fact that Mark was stuck on a train last week, so that's going to be done tomorrow and hopefully out soon. We've got Emma Turner on New Ed and her test column, which is fantastic, and her gym work as well, and you know, she'll know what I mean by that. We've also got Ross Morrison McGill, and he's coming up on his book Just Great Teaching. So the last of the shameless plugs, if you could consider becoming a patron on patreon.com and help towards the running costs of the podcast. And also, in exciting news, I've been given the okay by Tom Bennett to do a Research Ed National podcast. So I intend to deposit myself away in a classroom with a Oliver Caviglioli designed pull-up banner. So if you are a delegate or you are a speaker and you'd like to come and speak to me about your use of research and evidence in the classroom, then pop along, we'll record that and we'll put that out in a podcast probably late September. So it just remains for me to thank Patrice again for giving up her time, for you for listening, and I look forward to speaking to you all next time on Nailers Natter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.